he has a knack for political rhetoric, which is on the one hand kind of hokey, but on the other hand whips the crowd into a frenzy reliably. Sometimes they will be for cheesy things like MAGA is about making, it's not about making America great again, it's about making America hate again.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Focus Group podcast. I'm Sarah Longwell, publisher of The Bulwark, and this week we're going to Massachusetts because for some reason they hold their primary in September, and that is just the worst, but we're going to talk about it. Senator Ed Markey is running for a third full term in the Senate. That wouldn't usually be cause for a focus group episode in a safe blue state, but Markey is 80 years old, and in November, he will mark 50 years of being in Congress. And if you've listened to this show this year, you know that spending 50 years in Congress is a great way to earn yourself a primary challenge in 2026. For Markey, that's Congressman Seth Moulton, a Marine who ran for president in 2020. If you're like, I don't remember that guy running for president in 2020, Google it. I swear it happened. A lot of older Democrats have been on the ropes this year, but Ed Markey seems to be pulling away right now in this primary race. And we're going to make some guesses as to why the usual conventional wisdom around age is not holding up as well in Massachusetts as it is around the rest of the country. There are polls that have Markey leading by anywhere from 15 to 30 points in these last couple of weeks, though there were polls that had the race closer earlier in the summer. I have been skeptical of a lot of the primary polling, though, that has been happening all across the country. But my guest today, Adam Riley, is a political reporter at WGBH in Boston, and he's going to help us understand whether the polling is in line with what he is hearing there on the ground. And we're going to listen to our focus groups. And I would say our focus groups are relatively in line with that polling. Adam, thanks for being here.
Hey, it's my pleasure.
Okay, so I think national political observers, which are a lot of the people who listen to this show, would look at Massachusetts and see a uniformly deep blue state. And so they're like, why are you even talking about this race? Like, who cares? Because you're going to get a Democratic senator. But I'm interested in this race primarily because, A, the primary is the race, number one. But number two, I've just talked a ton on this show about age and, you know, this insurgent coming in. What's funny about this race, and the reason I wanted to do it, is it's a cross insurgency. So Moulton's trying to do the age thing, but Markey's got him on like the reliable progressive thing. And So it's a fun race to watch. I've been enjoying it. What do you think is cool about this race, or what should national people who might dismiss this as not an interesting race, like, why is it interesting to you?
I agree with you. I think it's about the fact that you've got Moulton on the one hand positioning himself as younger, more dynamic, clearly less old than Markey. He pretty much has come out and said, the reason I'm running against Ed Markey is that he's been in office for 50 years and he's too old to continue serving. But Moulton has struck this sort of center-left note throughout his time in Congress, including, and we can get to these in a minute, comments that he made about trans kids playing sports right after the last presidential election when Democrats were kind of in autopsy mode trying to figure out what went wrong. He's taken a lot of heat for those comments. He says that he is for Medicare for all who want it, whereas Markey says he's for Medicare for all. So Markey is the one who's got this sort of pure progressive bona fides. Moulton doesn't, although he's trying to cast himself as a progressive in this race. I think it's the first time I've ever heard him identify himself specifically as a progressive politician. So as you said, it's just this, we've got two things going on at once. There's age versus experience and centrism versus far left progressivism. Markey might balk at that, but certainly, you know, securely on the left progressivism on the other hand.
And just to level set for listeners, but also for me, like, tell me about Massachusetts Democrats, because I think about Massachusetts as a funny place that elected Mitt Romney for governor not so long ago. And it's a state where, like, it's definitely going to be won by a Democrat. And so that lets you really get into the factionalism that exists between primary voters. But just tell us what the Democrats are like there in Massachusetts.
I'm glad you mentioned the Romney election, because I feel like that's one caveat that people should be reminded of periodically, is that, yes, it's a very blue state. And the odds of John Deaton, who's the Republican nominee in waiting for this U.S. Senate seat, who will go against the winner of the Democratic primary, the odds of him pulling off a victory are pretty slim. He's run before. He ran against Elizabeth Warren the last time she was up for re-election. He didn't have a great deal of success, but he's a legitimate, competent candidate. But we do love to elect centrist Republican governors. We elected Mitt Romney, Charlie Baker for
Charlie
a couple
Baker.
Terms. Some of the highest approval ratings of any governor of any peer of any party in the country. For him, Bill Weld, Paul Cellucci. So there's a long tradition of people looking to centrist Republicans to run the state, in part because the legislature itself is so Democrat dominated. And for decades, that included everyone from people on the far left to people who in other states would probably be centrist Republicans who had conservative fiscal views, conservative social views on things like abortion and same-sex marriage. But they were Democrats simply because to succeed in Massachusetts politics, with very few exceptions, unless you're running for governor, to succeed in the state legislature, for example, you were going to be a Democrat because Democrats have supermajorities in both houses and have for a long time. So it's, yeah, we are a funky state in the way that we line up on very rare occasions with some Republicans with passion, but the rest of the time we kind of pretend the Republican Party doesn't exist.
Is the Democratic primary electorate much more progressive just as a rule, or is that something that is part of what we are seeing more broadly in the country right now, where some progressives are sort of outperforming the more centrist or establishment, as the conventional wisdom talks about, candidates?
I'm going to try to be sneaky and say I think the answer is both. In Massachusetts, as in some other states, independents who constitute I think they are an absolute majority of the electorate. If they're not an absolute majority, they're very, very close to it. Far and away, the most voters in Massachusetts are independent or unenrolled. They are free to pull a primary ballot and vote in either the Democratic or Republican primary. I am not sure the frequency with which they do that. I think some of them tend to sit it out, wait for the general, unless it's a really closely contested race. This one might attract some independents. Obviously, some of the unenrolled voters see themselves as, you know, they're unenrolled but de facto Democrats, or some are unenrolled but de facto Republicans. So you're certainly not going to get all of them voting in a contest like this one. And I think that you mentioned this bizarre timing of the primary at the very start of September.
What is happening? My goodness.
It's something that a lot of people here are not happy about because they think it's going to drive down voter turnout, which is never what people want it to be anyway. So I think that probably is a built-in advantage helping Ed Markey, since he is the candidate running further to the left than Seth Moulton.
Yeah, I mean, but if you guys did have a competitive Republican and you were, it's just like no time for a general election.
No, there's not a lot.
Wild. All right, let's get to the voters. We conducted two groups of Massachusetts Democrats for this episode that ended up being a pretty good mix of those leaning towards Markey and those leaning towards Moulton, with a few not really willing to make up their minds. So let's start by listening to the undecideds and how they talked about this race.
I like it. What was the other guy's name? Seth Markey?
Seth Moulton?
Yeah, but then I heard about his being on a board while voting on shitty at a stock market stocks in or something like that. I just heard about that one recently. I thought it was good, but Markey had more experience, I think.
I'm genuinely undecided because I just feel like I want someone else at this point. Markey has been... he's been in office for so long now that I just don't like the idea of having someone in office for that long. And the fact that, like, I do think that Moulton is platforming too much on the age platform, and I'm not a huge fan of the ageism. I also just don't trust him. I don't know. Every time I see him in an interview, first of all, like, he made those really crappy transphobic remarks at one time, which he's retracted. But, like, I don't know. He kind of showed his true colors. I'm just really undecided because I have things I don't like about either of them right now. So I don't really know who I'm going to vote for. I like the fact that Moulton is championing the high speed rail. That's something that Massachusetts definitely needs, you know, as someone who lives out in Western Mass. I'm trying to remember what it was that Margie said, and I genuinely don't remember. There was something that really put me off a while ago. I don't remember if it was like he had a history of like racism or something like that. There was something that was a bit of a deal breaker for me. But he also was like really based about some things, like a lot of the things that he's fighting for. He personally goes out of his way to be. Oh, you're asking what I don't like about them. Molten, to be honest, this sounds really like not a good way to vote, which is why I need to do more research. But he gives me the willies every time I see him in an interview. I just feel like I can't trust him. He feels like he's kind of really trying to platform on like, hey, I'm socially respectable. I'm a veteran. I'm just like the, you know, the Republicans, but Democrat.
Hmm. All right. So that's a taste of some undecided folks where they're, and this is a pretty classic A low info, right? They're not sure which right. one. These are people who are like, I'm going to go do more research. Didn't they say something that made me really mad? Yeah, I also
there was something
love
in the other week. What was it?
Yeah. What was it? It was such a deal breaker that you forgot what the thing was, right? That's a pretty classic voter sentiment. But to me, what was interesting, and I think I just wanted to figure out how much this is in the water there, is the idea that I don't like that Markey's old. But also, I don't like that Seth Moulton thinks that him being young is the only thing that qualifies him, because that was what I was hearing.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. And that was something that we heard from people. We did a debate that I co-moderated with Boston 25, which is a TV station here in town. I was one of the moderators. And during and after the debate, that was something that I heard, this sort of a pox on both their houses. As you said, I don't like that Markey is going to be 86 at the end of his next term if he's reelected. But at the same time, this is all Moulton has to talk about, or seems to be all Moulton has to talk about. I don't like the way he's doing it. It's worth reminding people, Moulton has a history of going after people on the basis of age. He was the leader of the push a few years back to oust Nancy Pelosi as Speaker of the House. And I believe she was in her late 70s at that point. I remember going to a town hall back when that was going on, watching Moulton address his constituents, talking about why he thought that Pelosi should not continue leading House Democrats. And someone got up and said effectively, you know, I find what you're doing incredibly ageist and offensive. I don't remember if the person was in their 70s or something, but it was basically, I'm perfectly capable of doing my job, which I continue to love. And I can't believe that you're calling on Pelosi to be ousted simply because she's pushing 80. And Moulton really just seemed not to be able to wrap his head around it. It was like, I remember feeling like I was watching kind of a disconnect where Moulton just didn't get why that line of attack would be problematic to some people. So given that, he may not have been softening it or finessing it or couching it in terms that might be more beneficial to him as he's tried to make his case throughout this campaign.
Yeah, I mean, the one thing that's changed since that race is that I think Joe Biden really turned a lot of voters into people saying like, all right, down with the gerontocracy. I hear this sentiment in focus groups about as often as I hear anything, which is on both sides of the aisle, this frustration with how old the cohort of congressional leaders is and the candidates that run for president. So I don't think that Moulton's crazy to say like, hey, we need a new generation of leadership. I do think the candidates, especially people who are running in places where a lot of the constituents who are going to be voting for them are in their 70s and 80s, which is true of a lot of primary voters. Mm-hmm. There is, you do have to sort of walk a line between being able to say, hey, I think we need new leadership, and also not being like, because old people can't do anything.
Yeah, and I think it might have helped Moulton more up to this point in the campaign if he had had more alternate ideas to float. You know, Senator Markey, if he had been able to say, I greatly respect, as he likes to say, Senator Markey's 5 decades in service in Washington. But we need a new generation. And, you know, also here are these big new ideas that I'm bringing to the table that Senator Markey is not. He's been pretty frank about saying that when it comes to policy, there's not a lot that separates them. And I wonder if that in and of itself might be something that he'd look for a redo on if he had a chance to script this campaign again from the beginning.
I think you're right. Put a pin in that idea. I want to come back to this idea of everybody's getting into a moderate progressive frame. And this is one of the starkest maybe of that. And part of the problem for the moderates is, okay, it's not enough to just be like, I'm younger and I'm more moderate. Be like, mm-hmm. but I can be exciting because I have all these ideas. And I think this is,
right.
Yeah. And I think this is an endemic problem for the center left, is that they have not figured out what they are for. And so they're kind of like, yeah, I got clowns to the right, jokers to the left, and here I am. But that's not, I'm like, you're going to have to do better than that. So, all right, let's get into the more decided folks, because it will lead us deeper into that conversation. This is what the pro-Markey and anti-Moulton sentiment sounded like from these groups. Let's listen.
Before I go to the polls, I need to dive in deeper. I like the fact that Markey's been in the Senate. He knows how it works. He knows who's who. He tends to be more a little bit more progressive. I just have to learn more about Moulton. Any comments about trans or about anything that's, you know, against like what Mike was saying about humanity, won't fly with me.
I do have concern about Markey's age. I guess he's 80 or going to be 80 if he's reelected. Now, I have concern about that. But what I think the saving grace of that is that were he gets sick or whatever, be unable to complete his term. I think Seth Moulton is a smart guy. He's very articulate. He knows what he stands for. But I just like that Ed is more progressive. That I know that Seth Moulton is taking a lot of corporate dollars. I know that he's, and it's very interesting. You know, I'll say as a Jew, someone who grew up that way, I just don't like that he's taking money from a conservative AIPAC and is a huge supporter of that. I wish Ed were 46, like Seth Moulton was, is.
One of the reasons I possibly would vote for him is that he puts himself physically in situations where he wants to make a statement or have an effect. Like, he's been going to ICE detention centers to try to have an impact. Like, he's actually will go places and be like, hey, I need to talk to someone. And that is something I see really favorably.
I thought that the ad where he had the, I grew up with Ed Markey and I think he's, I quit. So time for him to quit. I really, really resented that ad. I thought that was really horrible. And I don't know why, but I find Seth Moulton creepy. I don't like him. And the fact that he's taken money from AIPAC really, really seals the deal for me. There are a bunch of different things. The problem with Trump isn't that he's old. The problem is that he has shitty policies. If he dies 2 years into his 6-year term, our governor will find someone who I'm sure is on the same bandwidth as Ed Markey. I think somebody should be in the center of the Democratic Party, not in the center, because the Democratic Party, I think we stand for affordable housing. I think we stand for food for children. I think that we stand for trans rights. I think that we stand for education. And I think that those are being labeled, I feel, are being labeled as leftist policies. I think that Ed Markey is where the heart of the Democratic Party is.
I've given it a lot of thought. I wrote Markey a letter last year telling him that I think he should not run again. And I wished he hadn't and had appointed somebody who shares his values. And I think for an 80-year-old, he has energy and he has commitment and he's passionate. And I like him a lot. I don't know. Seth just turns me the wrong way. I did not think he was kind in the debate. I just really disliked him and his comments about trans. I just don't trust him. The main thing that rubbed me the wrong way is when he goes into as a father of two children and, how dare you do this? And any connection that Markey had with anything with Epstein wasn't anything that should be attacked. I mean, it was so distant. It was a lobbyist who was, it wasn't anything directly that Ed did. And I just thought that was a cheap shot.
I went with Ed because he has experience. I agree with his politics. Moulton, I think, is almost too liberal or socialistic, I guess is the term. I think, I don't know that we're ready for that yet.
So suffice to say, Seth Moulton is not the more socialistic one in this race. Well, you know, sometimes, I try to be constantly sort of explain voters. Sometimes they're giving an answer just to give an answer, and they don't know that much about the race. It's still good to get a pulse on it, but that person.
This is fascinating to hear this stuff. In particular, the Epstein stuff, which I hope we get a chance to.
Well, I wanted to ask about the Epstein stuff because I don't know what that is about. What's the deal there? Explain it.
The deal there is that in the debate that we co-hosted and that I co-moderated, Seth Moulton, they were each given a chance to ask one question of the other that they had prepared in advance. And Seth Moulton's question was effectively, I'm not going to get into the details here, but how could you take a meeting with a lobbyist on behalf of Jeffrey Epstein after he'd been convicted for sex crimes? And it was the equivalent in the debate room of the, you know, the needle going across the record. Everyone kind of just, wait, what happened? And just to try to sum it up as quickly as I can, the Moulton campaign argued that they found Markey's name in the Epstein files, and he is in the Epstein files, as are many, you know, I'm not in the Epstein files. I don't know if you search for yourself. I'm guessing you're not, but a lot of public.
I didn't search for myself because I was deeply confident I was not in there.
Yeah, I hadn't done it until after this. And someone said, did you ever search yourself? And I said, no, I haven't. But what they were accusing Markey of doing was taking a meeting with a lobbyist who was working to free the imprisoned son of a former president of Senegal. And at this point, Markey was the subcommittee. He was the head of the Foreign Relations Subcommittee on Africa and Global Health, I believe. So if he had taken the meeting, and this guy ultimately ended up being freed, I believe his name was Karim Wade or Wade. If he did take a meeting with a lobbyist who was seeking to free this guy, it would not be unreasonable, given his position as the subcommittee chair for Africa and Global Health. Markey has said that despite this email in the Epstein files, which says we gave an initial briefing to Markey about this issue, he has said and he insists that no such meeting ever took place. We've tried to find out if there's proof of a meeting taking place, which wouldn't, again, necessarily be proof of wrongdoing. We haven't been able to find anything that undercuts Markey's claim that he never met with anyone. Now, it's tricky. As you know, you have to register if you're a lobbyist on behalf of foreign agents, but you can also get around it by registering another way. So it's a little tricky. And just to try to close the loop, again, this is incredibly convoluted. Epstein, I believe, was the money manager for for this family that was seeking to free the son of the former Senegalese president. So that's why it's Epstein connected, or Epstein adjacent, at least. But again, Markey has come out and said, I never took a meeting like this. I don't know what you're talking about. And there's been no one's been able to prove, yes, you did. And even if they did prove, yes, you did, I don't think it would necessarily have the effect they were looking for. Because when you say you took a meeting on behalf of Epstein, to me, that makes it sound like you sat down with a lobbyist who was arguing that Jeffrey Epstein got a raw deal for the things that he did. And, you know, we should be lenient with him. We should be talking about commuting his sentence. And that clearly never happened. That didn't happen at all.
Yeah,
I don't know if that makes sense. I'm trying to move really fast.
No, it makes total sense. It makes total sense. I mean, and look, I think that we've gone through a period of adjudicating a lot of what is in the Epstein files. And I do think that the public is much more primed than it was months and months ago to say, okay, some people were meeting with Jeffrey Epstein because they were dirtbags, they were participating in things. And then other people either didn't know, like there's people's names showing up in there that certainly were doing nothing wrong, that somebody else mentioned their name. I mean, you could see this in this instance pretty easily. It sounds to me like somebody on their staff met with, you know, like there's some, that they sent some 25-year-old from the staff to meet with them. And, and you know, people say things like, well, we met with Markey, when what they really mean is they sent some 25-year-old from the office.
Right. And just, I should mention, they brought this up in the second debate, surprised everyone. None of us saw this coming. And then in the third debate, it wasn't mentioned once. So to me, what that suggests is that the Moulton campaign felt like the campaign was maybe getting away from them a little bit, went for it with a Hail Mary with this incredibly incendiary charge, and then saw it was after that debate that the polling numbers really started to break in Markey's favor. And obviously correlation's not causation, but I think they probably realized they turned off people with it as opposed to helping their cause.
That does, it does seem to be, you know, I got to say, and this is tough for Moulton, who I like, by the way, I'll just say that personally myself, but I listen to a lot of voters talk about J.D. Vance, and Seth Moulton gets talked about like J.D. Vance does, where it's sort of like, I don't know, but this guy gives me the creeps, or I don't know, I just don't like him. That is a, that is how J.D. Vance gets talked about. And I was surprised how much Moulton was getting kind of the, I don't know what it is, but I just don't like the guy, which is a tough rap from the voters. But it might be that in his quest to go after Markey, he's just been made some missteps about his lines of attack, and it's ended up backfiring.
He is, I mean, in many ways, he's a very admirable guy. You know, he went to Harvard. He was a Harvard physics major, and then he enrolled to fight in Iraq. And it was not a war that he supported, but it was a war he felt he had an obligation to serve in so that others didn't. And yeah, I mean, that alone is remarkable. And he's created this organization, which he's trying to leverage on his behalf. Serve America is the pact that he set up to get more vets elected as Democrats to Congress. And he's trying to recoup some of those efforts. He had Mikey Sherrill. Wait, I always forget. Is it Mikey or Mickey? Mikey, right?
Mikey.
Mikey, yeah, he had Mikey Sherrill in town stomping for him recently. I think some other people have come out and endorsed him. So, yeah, there's much he's done that's impressive.
He had a pretty serious primary challenger from Representative Joe Kennedy in 2020, who was also kind of a younger upstart. And Markey won by like 11 points, I think. And this time, Markey's got, he's got Bernie, he's got AOC, he's got all the big progressive stars coming out for him.
Warren, Ayanna Pressley,
Has this always been Markey's bag, to be sort of like at the vanguard of progressivism? Is that who he is in the state?
I think that's who he's been in the amount of time that I've been covering politics. I think he may have, you know, grown more liberal on many issues compared to when he was in the state house 50 plus years ago. That's not in and of itself surprising. You know, a half century is a long time to span in politics. But when he beat Joe Kennedy, who a lot of people thought, oh, there's no way that Ed Markey can fend off a Kennedy, right? I mean, here's a real live actual Kennedy who was a member of Congress at that point in time. One of the things that really benefited Markey was he was able to cultivate this sort of strange cachet with Generation Z voters and to become sort of a cause celeb for the very youngest, most interconnected online members of the electorate. This was during COVID when everyone was spending way too much time on Twitter, you know, creating weird memes about politics and that sort of thing. And Markey just completely tapped into that zeitgeist. And I think that support from people who are old enough to be his grandkids is one big reason that he won last time around. I haven't seen that as much in this case, I think in part because Twitter was the space where that activity was really centered last time around. And Twitter is, you know, Twitter's no longer Twitter. It's now X, and it has a very different feel. But he has this almost cult-like following among young voters.
Yeah, I find it because he kind of positions himself as like, I'm squad. I'm on the squad. Like it's me and, you know, AOC and Ayanna Pressley. And like I do think people who, There's a crossover between people who are like, yeah, I want a based old man, white guy, yells at cloud, who's also part of the squad. Like, that's a fun combo for some of these Gen Z progressives.
He has a knack for political rhetoric, which is on the one hand kind of hokey, but on the other hand, whips the crowd into a frenzy reliably. If you watch him address an audience of Democrats, if you go to the Massachusetts Democratic Convention, the biggest applause lines are going to come for Ed Markey. And sometimes they will be for cheesy things like MAGA is not about making America great again. It's about making America hate again. And and so he's got, I swear, a good two or three dozen of these things, and he busts them out and people love him, which fits your old man yells at cloud and his member of squad characterization, which is great.
Yeah. I want to talk about the people who actually liked Seth Moulton, because we had them. There were relative to the polling, I still felt like there was a lot of people who were pro Seth Moulton in these groups. So let's talk about what they liked about him.
I'm probably leaning towards Seth Moulton at this point. I respect Ed Markey for his experience and his history and what he cares about. But I feel like, you know, for the most part, I'm leaning towards something that's going to change things up a little bit. And maybe that will be the case.
I think Markey is okay, but I think he's been generally ineffective as a senator. And Moulton is younger. I don't think he is 80 already. I don't think an 80-year-old should run for Senate for a 6-year term. I don't think an 80-year-old belongs in the government. I think Moulton, to me, represents a slightly more moderate approach, and I'm in favor of that as opposed to the, you know, Elizabeth Warren, Markey sort of wing of the party.
I don't have anything against Ed Markey. I voted for him in the past. And if he won, it's not like I'd be horribly disappointed. But it's just maybe it's not Markey specifically. It's just the Democratic establishment in general. All those 70 and 80 year olds, we just have to get them out. They have no idea how to deal with Trump. They're still institutionalists. They don't realize we need new ideas. And I don't know if Seth Moulton knows, but at least he's younger and he may come up with something, especially with other new people coming in.
I like Markey. I like Moulton. We can't lose this. Whoever wins that, I'm okay with them. I like Markey. He's a gentleman. He's progressive. He speaks his mind. He's articulate. Seth Moulton is very much like him. He's just younger and more energetic, and he's a bulldog. I think a lot of people are so fed up with the status quo, take the high road. Markey's on the high road, and I have loved him for it. I'm ready for the low road. I'm ready to kick some ass. And I feel like Moulton is part of a youth movement. Socialistic or not, give it a label or not, there's a youth movement, it's high energy, and they're going to battle. They're all going in there to battle. And I think Moulton is primed for that.
Markey comes across as low energy. He's been around the block a lot of times. He doesn't come across as a fighter. And Moulton comes across as a fighter, somebody with a lot of high energy. Their views are very similar, all right? They really are. But it's just that Moulton comes across as somebody who's got more energy and is willing to stand up to Trump and the MAGA Republicans. And that, you know, that comes across for me. So in a sense, he reminds me of Elizabeth Warren. Elizabeth Warren's a fighter, in my opinion. She always shows a lot of energy. And to have two of them in the Senate like that, that are willing to go toe-to-toe with the Republican Party when it's necessary, makes me feel that, for me at least, Seth Moulton would be the better choice.
I was not paying attention to the debate very much, but I do feel like the age issue is the primary one for me. I feel like the idea that Markey would be 86 and finishing his term, you know, it doesn't seem plausible to me. And not that he can't make it there, but I don't know if he's going to make it there in you know, control of all his faculties and on top of his games.
Okay, so I want to hit you with my thesis, because much has been made in the broader commentariat about progressives versus moderate, progressives versus the establishment, or the DSA versus the establishment. And I gotta say, in this conversation about Seth Moulton, these voters are imputing onto Seth Moulton a whole range of things that do not exist for Seth Moulton. Like this idea that he's the young fighter. Like they're not describing him as a moderate. Like he's more centrist. Like that's not the thing that that they are either excited about or rejecting. That's not in there. They're just, they read Younger as fighter. And I find that interesting because I do think across all these races, as a lot of the national media gets into these ideological fights, I keep trying to say, no, people are really mad. They want fighters. And so sometimes it's just that these DSA candidates sound more fighty, or they're younger mm-hmm. and they seem more energetic. They're just new. And so like, this is what voters are going for. It's not that we've Democrats have necessarily become more socialist. It's that they have become, they want people who are more aggressive. They want fighters. Yep. And so these guys aren't even like flagging that he is a moderate, and they're just looking at Markey and saying, I think he's too old. And that's it. Like, and, but I will say, just to decode focus groups a little bit, even though there was plenty of sort of pro-Moulton sentiment, you could hear the difference between what the pro-Markey people really dislike. They dislike Moulton, whereas the pro-Moulton people all like Markey fine. They mostly like him fine. They just think he's a little bit old, but they don't dislike him.
They and I think that, that there's something about that guy reacting.
That's right. So what did you make of that sound?
I mean, I think I buy your thesis about the urge to fight or combativeness having a different, like being interpreted as meaning something else for people. I was a little surprised to hear people describe Markey as low energy, because I feel like his energy level, and I would say this for Elizabeth Warren as well. Elizabeth Warren, I remember following her when she was running for president. She showed more energy during her presidential run than I've ever felt at any point in my life.
She would literally run. I remember this about her. Yeah. She was always running onto the stage.
She was. She was always running onto the stage. Exactly. I don't know that Markey is as energetic as her, but I was a little surprised to hear him described as low energy by the people who did it. And I think to come back to your point that you made right at the outset about that difference between what the Markey fans have to say about Moulton and what the Moulton fans have to say about Markey, that's probably the most interesting, I think you're spot on, that's probably the most interesting takeaway from this conversation, from contrasting those particular sets of sound bites. Because, yeah, there wasn't a single one, right? There wasn't a single Moulton supporter who said, yeah, there's just something about Markey, I can't put my finger on it, but he's not quite right.
Yeah, he's been a disaster. I don't like this vote. There's this thing that sticks out to me that makes me angry. Like, they don't really have that. It's actually, like, if anything, to me, they sounded a little bit like the way that people would talk about Janet Mills in Maine, which is actually, they all really liked her. They were just ready for something new. But that's why this race is so interesting to me, because it's flipping the dynamic, though, that was there where they... In this case, the new thing is just not as appealing as but for the people who like Moulton, it still is. No, but I like the guy. That's clearly giving him, I think, the edge in this race, which is nobody dislikes him the way that mm-hmm. people dislike. It sounds like Moulton.
You're actually the only person I've heard break it down that way. And I think, it's very interesting listening to those two competing sets of reactions. Can I just mention one thing super quickly, which I forgot about? There were a couple of people, when they were asked about why they didn't like Moulton, a couple of people mentioned him taking money from AIPAC. He has, I believe, said that he is not going to take any more donations from AIPAC, and that he's going to return past donations that he received from the group. He's been pretty, obviously I forget things about these people, and I am paid to cover them for a living. But I just want to make sure that people know that Moulton he's actually been pretty critical when it comes to the Netanyahu government and their actions in Gaza. So that if that's an issue that people have with Moulton, they might want to look again and look at what he's had to say and look at what he's done on that, because he's been out there.
Yeah, I mean, this is all over the primary races in a ton of the groups, is that just AIPAC, and like, you didn't know it, these candidates didn't know it 7 years ago when they took the money, or 4 years ago when they were taking money, that it was going to become the litmus test of 2026. I mean, the extent to which voters in the Democratic focus groups, if they hear AIPAC, and this is where Moulton, I haven't been following this closely, but I would just suspect that him saying, I'm not taking AIPAC money anymore. And also I'm returning AIPAC money. The only thing that voters are hearing are Seth Moulton AIPAC, Seth Moulton AIPAC. And for them, that's like, that's bad. That's a bad thing. Like, they know that that's code for somebody that they don't want to vote for right now because it's become such a litmus test. I will say the bull case for Moulton, you know, he's the younger, he fights harder. But there was a moment in the debate, the final debate, and we did this, unfortunately, it was our mistake. We did this group right before the very last debate, because we were trying to get it in. And I want to play one clip from where the candidates were asked about AI. Let's play that and then we'll talk about it.
Senator Markey, do you personally use AI platforms like Claude or ChatGPT in your work?
I use whatever is inside of my iPhone and my iPad, whatever comes up. And I don't know what company my iPad might be using. But if it does, in fact, provide me with the information which I'm asking the device to give to me, then, of course, I'm using it.
Congressman Moulton?
Yes, I use AI. We're very careful about how to use it, to use it honestly, to use it effectively. But these are tools that can help. But they're also tools that need protections. And with all due respect, Senator, if you don't even know what you're using on your phone or your iPad, like, this is why we need a new generation of leaders to regulate these technologies, to make sure that they are safe. They are safe for families. And again, I'm not denigrating the fact that you're working on this stuff. I did not denigrate the fact that you're working on energy. I simply said it's not enough. It hasn't been enough. That's why there's an affordability crisis today. Whatever we've been doing for the last 50 years just isn't working. And that's why voters in this race are asking, Senator, what are you going to do differently in the next 6 years that you haven't done in the last 50?
All right. So that seems like a pretty clean hit. And Markey's answer was tough. That sounds like, a little bit like, I don't know what this machine is giving me.
Did that reverberate
through the state, though? Did that matter? Did it catch people's attention?
I think for people who are watching this race, that was a moment that got a lot of attention and was clearly, it was the standout moment of that debate, and it worked in Moulton's favor. The reason I was laughing, by the way, I want to be very clear, I wasn't laughing at Markey's response per se. I was laughing at the sort of the look of glee in Moulton's eyes as Markey gave that response, knowing that he'd been teed up to go after him. And then if the exchange proceeded with Markey saying, you know, it doesn't matter if it's called Claude or if it's called Siri. Or if it's called what, and Moulton continued saying, yeah, it actually really does matter what it's called because these things operate in radically different ways and we need to be cognizant of what those ways are. That was the best moment that I think Moulton had in probably any of the debates so far. And there is a case to be made that there are certain issues. And Markey, I think, legislatively has been very active on the regulation of AI in a way that Moulton has not. That's how the Markey campaign pushed back at this. But there's a case to be made that, you know, if you are of a certain age as I am, I know that when it comes to like making my phone do certain things, my kids have a facility with it that I just simply lack. I don't have it, right? There's a case to be made that there are certain problems that you don't understand if you're of a certain vintage that you do get if you are several decades younger. And this is one of them.
I got to say, one of the reasons I wanted to do an episode about this race is that it really is confounding a number of the things that I think are sort of foregone conclusions at this point, because AI is an enormous issue with voters. They think about it all the time. And one of the reasons they want younger candidates is because they feel like these older candidates do not understand the technological challenges that people are facing, not just AI and how AI has got AI data centers, AI and jobs, but also AI and their kids and what's it going to do to education and did our phones going to be in schools? Like, these are everyday challenges that people face all the time. And older, like, Ed Markey just sounded exactly like what I hear voters saying. That person is too old to understand the issues that really matter in this moment.
I think that probably killed him, because when I say killed him, I meant he was probably really frustrated after the fact, because he's been very active on stuff when it comes to trying to rein in tech companies so that they don't behave in ways that are deleterious to kids. And this is sort of a Markey's been very active when it comes to trying to check big tech. So to have a moment where he, you know, comes out with this answer that makes him look like he's completely ignorant, I would imagine the Markey camp was really frustrated by that.
All right. Well, as we get to the end here, I'm gonna ask whether, as it wraps up, whether it made a big enough difference to help Moulton in what is a really tough environment for him. But first, I want to talk about the trans stuff, because the trans sports. I remember when Moulton did this, and you mentioned this before. It was at the time that the Democrats were like, they lost to Trump for a second time. It's 2024 and everybody wants to figure out what's going on. And the Trump is for you, Kamala's for they, them ad, it was a devastating hit on her campaign, made her look to a lot of swing voters as like really radical. You know, Republicans have taken the issue that used to be like, don't discriminate against trans people, which is a majority of Americans agree with, to the area of sports and kids transitioning, which tend to be like 70-30 issues. And so Moulton seemed to be somebody who was trying to sort of jump into that moment and say, the next generation of leadership is going to have better answers on this. And so he said at the time, I have two little girls. I don't want them getting run over on a playing field by a male or formerly male athlete. But as a Democrat, I'm supposed to be afraid to say that. So Markey accused Moulton of throwing trans kids under the bus. Moulton apologized to the transgender community in the debate you moderated with him and said, I deeply recognize your trauma and I'm sorry if my comments hurt you. But he's also said there should be a debate around fairness issues with transgender athletes in sports. I'm going to play you because so many people in the focus groups brought this up. We've already heard it. But I want to play more of what voters said about the trans Moulton on the trans issue. And then we'll talk about it on the other side. Let's listen.
I should Google it and look exactly what he said, you know, word for word. But, you know, I think that much has been made about it, and it's such a small percentage of the population. And I feel like the protection of minority rights is so important to me that I don't want to see somebody in the Senate hammering on people who don't deserve to be hammered on in that way. But I also feel like he's playing the sort of political game of saying, okay, where do I need to stand in order to get people to support me?
What he said was the Democrats are losing because we're, you know, staying so far and making this an issue that people go, well, that's what they, you know, I don't know, they want the boogeyman or something. And he just said, if I'm correct, that he stood up and said, I don't want my daughter to get tackled by someone who was born a boy in sports, right? Is that a crazy statement? I don't think so. This is all sort of new waters that people are still, look at what the WNBA is going through and all different things, right? It's just like, what there's just, I think it's a distraction.
In terms of the science out there, like the exact like effect of testosterone production, like it differs a lot when we're talking about, you know, sports in like, you know, K through 12 versus, you know, sports with adults. Like when it comes to the WNBA, like, you know, I'm pretty sure that like conservatives tried to, you know, pull a stunt where people like where men competed under the pretense of being trans, but like they were going to make a documentary out of it, but they had to turn it into like a comedy movie because that's not how it actually worked. It's not exactly like clear how much of that is just like an occupational hazard of doing sports and how much of it is just, well, you know, down to the differences.
He was talking about political correctness in general and how the Democrats got captured by it. And I think that the Democratic you know, sort of religious fervor towards political correctness has really become a wedge issue that Republicans have used against them very successfully, and that the Democrats have to fight against that. That they're not on the majority side on those issues, and unfortunately,
I think the Democrats need to keep their eye on the ball. They lost the ball. They're dealing with relatively minor issues that affect a very small percentage of the population, while the country is going to hell in a handbasket and is being lost to corrupt and inept administration.
I know the MAGA is so far right, but I think that there's the Democrats, some of them are too far left, and we need to come closer to the middle. And just like what I said earlier about the income versus assets for like financial stuff programs, this trans issue is the same thing. It's not like all or nothing. There could be a thing like maybe you can be playing sports, but you haven't gone through puberty. There's other like nuances that we have to dig into that issue to make it work, but it's just not all or nothing.
It was also that he actually misgendered the athletes and called them men, which only focused on trans women. So that was part of it, too.
So I wanted to play this not just because it's relevant to this race or it's played a role in this race, but because when I do Republican focus groups, of which I do many Trump voting focus groups, they bring up transport stuff all the time. And they are in lockstep on the idea that it is a crazy thing to do. You can hear the Democrats have a real mix of opinion on this, and it creates for them what I think is a tough catch-22, where in the primary, you heard a lot of people in the groups who were saying why they didn't like Moulton, like they remembered the trans comments, like it really defined them, defined him to them. On the other hand, you can also hear in many of the voters that they think this is either not an important issue, which is something I hear a lot of, like, I wish people wouldn't talk about it. And you could tell if you watch these groups, they're uncomfortable talking about this issue. Like, they didn't love, Republicans love talking about this issue. Democrats do not love talking about this issue unless they feel really, really strongly about it. But that's, there's one cohort that feels really strongly about it. You shouldn't throw trans people under the bus. This is a litmus test on like how you think about human dignity. Then there's the other side that's like, I don't know. I think we're maybe going too far here, whatever.
Which how I think is played like out 10 Democrats, basically, right?
Yes. Yes. Yeah. No, this is a 70-30 issue. I write about this. I have a whole chapter in my book called Trans America, where I really pull this apart. And it is tough because for a lot of people, and I came up during the gay marriage movement. I was very involved in the gay marriage movement. But like one of the things about the gay marriage movement that I think we thought about a lot was how you didn't make politicians kind of walk the plank on your issue if the public wasn't there yet. Like we understood very clearly that Barack Obama was not going to be for gay marriage until it was a 60-40 issue in favor of gay marriage, which is exactly what happened. And right now, Democrats in primaries don't accept that, right? There is, and maybe actually that's how Democrats were in primaries at the time. But in a general election, it seems like it's a tough thing to have to meet the demands of Democrats in a primary and then run in a general when the issue is a 70-30 issue in a general election.
I think that is something really tough to do. However, I think if Moulton had been more careful in his phrasing, if he had said, for example, when he made those comments in the first place, if he'd said, you know, to channel what you were mentioning a moment ago, Sarah, the vast majority of the country thinks that trans people should not be discriminated against and should be afforded basic rights, but they're a lot more uncomfortable when it comes to trans participation in sports. That's a conversation we need to be able to have as Democrats. That would resonate in a completely different way than him conjuring up his daughters getting mowed down by, as he put it, a male or formerly male athlete. And he came up with the wording he did for whatever reason, and it has stayed with him. He didn't really back off or say he'd made a mistake at any point in the days after. And his apologies that he's offered have been contingent apologies. It's been, you know, if I hurt you, if I upset you. And he knows he hurt and upset people. So I think that just a little more rhetorical artfulness would have removed this as a checkmark against him in this race, and that we would probably see it resulted in the polling. I mean, it's impossible to prove that, but that's what my gut tells me.
You know what? I think you're absolutely right, especially because I do think as people, you know, this is he's right. This is a new issue. Voters are trying to figure out how they think about it. I think there's a lot of nuances to it. And one of the nuances is kids in sports versus grownups in sports. And people have different thoughts about that, right? There's, and so his, I don't know how old his girls were when he made these comments, but based on his relative youth, one assumes they're relatively young.
Yeah, I think they're, I can't remember exactly, but single digits, you know, they're not, yeah, they're young kids.
Right. So like they're not playing against, you know, what the way that he conjured the image is not actually how it works. And I think that, again, people are starting to make a distinction where just leave kids alone, like let kids play sports in a lot of those ages, you know, up until 12 or so. You know, a lot of those sports are actually girls and boys. I mean, I played on a mixed gender team until I was, you know, until you're kind of getting ready to hit puberty. And so I think that that is a different issue for people than what do you do in the Olympics? What do you do in the NBA? Which is like a different kind of question. And yeah, I think by conflating those two, I do think he hurt himself there. I think you're right.
And yeah, even if he just came out and said, given a full-throated apology, I'm really sorry about the way I handled this sensitive issue. I screwed it up. I shouldn't have addressed it the way I did. I think people might have credited him for that, but he hasn't done that yet.
Yeah. Interesting. All right. Anything else? Like, does Markey have anything else that he's hanging around Moulton's neck that's really hurting him? Or kind of wrap this up for me in terms of where you think the race is going and what does it mean? Does it say anything more broadly than just this particular race with these two particular guys?
You know, you talked about Joe Biden bringing age and the problems that can come with age to the fore. As you know, it's not just Joe Biden. I mean, we had Joe Biden's campaign implode in the way that it did. We recently had Lindsey Graham pass away at, how old was Senator Graham? 71, I want to say. The ongoing drama around Mitch McConnell and his ill health and what's going on there. So given how much this is in the air, I think it's easy to say that if Markey gets reelected, that it's, you know, just an incumbent using the power of incumbency to win again. If he manages to win this, given all the things that have been occurring that make people think negatively about Asian politics, I think he'll really deserve a lot of credit, maybe more than people will be inclined to give him, because that's a stiff headwind to go against.
Yeah. I really appreciate you coming and doing the show. My favorite thing is when I get local reporters who've been doing these debates, know these politicians and know the voters in their states, because, you know, I dip in and do a couple of focus groups, but you're really living in there.
Focus groups are fabulous. They were really interesting.
Well, tell me, did the focus groups comport with your feelings about how, like, did they sound like they were representative of what you're hearing in the state?
I think so. Yeah. Yeah. There was nothing I heard that, other than, you know, the occasional person labeling Moulton more liberal or socialistic or whatever. Other than that, yeah, very much so. And that includes the your point, which I had not thought through until you made it. The point about the Moulton fans talk about Markey this way and the Markey fans talk about Moulton that way. That comports with what I've seen. I just hadn't realized it until you pulled it out. So nicely done.
Well, I'm always thinking about who's persuadable. And so that requires a lot of, like, how dug in are people? And when one side is more pretty open and flexible and the other side's really dug in, you know that there's an asymmetry there that's really based on enthusiasm and not just numbers. But, you know, I guess as a final matter, and then we'll get out of here. We saw recently that, you know, Francesca Hong in Wisconsin, now she went on kind of a national tour and suddenly everybody's like, wait a minute. Right. But this guy Crowley, who's a more moderate guy, jumped in the race and was able to eke out a victory over her, despite a lot of polling showing her that she was up by these huge margins. Any chance that the AI comment or people suddenly go, oh, I don't know. Or is the fact that there is no general election that comes after this basically make people be like, Markey's fine. We're going for him.
You know, I got an advisory for a great big Markey rally, which I think is happening this weekend, featuring, I believe, Bernie Sanders, Elizabeth Warren, Ayanna Pressley. I don't think AOC was listed as a guest, although I could be wrong. And I found myself wondering, is this, you know, evidence that Markey just wants to sort of crush this thing and, you know, take it over the finish line with as much power as he can? Or is he actually, despite everything that's happened, and despite all the reasons he has to feel confident, is he a little unsure about where things are headed? Moulton beat a longtime congressional incumbent to join Congress. He beat a guy named John Tierney several years ago. And Moulton also, he's in a way fighting for his political life here because he's 47 years old. And, you know, obviously he's going to lose his seat one way or another, whether he wins or whether he doesn't. But if he wants to make a comeback in politics, once you get past 50, once you're on the wrong side of 50, I think it's harder to pull the new generation pitch. So yeah. I don't want to go out on a limb and say that Moulton can't win this. I would bet, if I were betting, I think Markey's probably going to be attracting more money in the predictions markets right now. But you know, we've seen the race be close before. Polling occurred before the AI comment, which you talked about. And who knows what will happen in the last week of the campaign, too. I mean, we really, you know, anything could happen.
I'm hostile to prediction markets. I prefer focus groups. Okay, Adam Riley, thank you so much for joining us.
Sarah, thank you.
Thanks to all of you for listening to another episode of the Focus Group Podcast. We're going to be back next week. But in the meantime, remember to rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. Subscribe to The Bulwark on YouTube. Become a Bulwark Plus member at thebulwark.com so you can jump into the comments and tell me what you thought of this discussion. We'll see you guys soon. This is the last primary we are covering this year. So we're going to go into full general election mode. So stick around. Bye, guys.